This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. When the COVID-19 pandemic shut down our lives, CVG Airport noticed it saw most of its travel decline last year. But the coronavirus pandemic is improving here, and vacations are being planned and flights are being booked. We spoke earlier with CVG Airport CEO Candace McGraw about what to expect there. Here's our interview. Candace McGraw is the CEO of the Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport, better known around these parts as CVG. Candace, welcome back to Cincinnati Edition.
Well, thanks for having me. Always good to talk with you.
Indeed. And last year was tough on a lot of us, on a lot of our industries, and certainly airports were hit extraordinarily hard. Before we dive into what we're expecting for the year ahead, I know there's a lot of optimism. Let's look back on the past year plus. What happened at CVG?
All right, we'll look back only if we have to, because we want to focus on the future. But just to sort of set the tone, we finished 2020 at about 40% of the passengers we had in 2019. So you're absolutely correct. You know, the aviation industry was very hard hit. The one bright point of the whole 2020 experience, though, for the airport was our cargo traffic. We finished at, double digits. I think we were about 16% over the prior year, which had been a record. So while the passenger traffic was off, cargo continued to boom.
The airport locally, your airport, has been very strategic in focusing on cargo. We know there are major cargo industries out there, DHL, Amazon, and the likes. How important has that been in retrospect? How did that help keep you, I guess, in a better position than you otherwise would be?
Yeah, no, thank you for talking about the strategy that we had in place here. I think, the Great Recession and the downsizing when we were a large passenger hub taught us that we needed to diversify our business. Like all businesses out there should be, right? You need to be able to recession proof. So thankfully we had, DHL is their largest operation in the Americas is here. Amazon booming, FedEx booming, and we had our land development strategy. So thankfully, because of the cargo carriers, they literally kept our lights on and kept things running here. So while we were very hard hit from a revenue standpoint in terms of passenger carriers and parking concessions, the cargo carriers were a godsend to us.
We know that CVG Airport struggled about a decade ago. We lost the Delta hub status in our area. We saw local airline Comair kind of go away, and I think you even closed a terminal. So what do you think the airport learned from that previous decline that made it positioned perhaps to better handle what everyone dealt with when the pandemic arrived?
Yeah, I think that the lessons learned is that you do not, you can't have all of your eggs in one basket. Again, we embarked on a strategy to diversify our carriers. I mean, Delta is a great carrier and we love them here and they provide great service, but we also wanted to provide a variety of different carriers with different levels of service. So we've been able to achieve that. We diversified into cargo, and DHL is a fabulous business partner, but we didn't want them to be the only cargo carrier here. So we've diversified with Amazon and some FedEx business. We've got into the land development business, but again, didn't want to have only one type of customer in that development. So we have everything from, distribution facilities, but GE Aviation, manufacturing, to retail, et cetera. So all of that taught us is really to diversify to keep ourselves fiscally sustainable into the future.
We're talking with Candace McGraw, the CEO of the Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport, or CVG. We know a lot of the airport, and in the time leading up to the arrival of the pandemic, there were a lot of new destinations being announced, new low-cost carriers coming in, improving access to travel for a lot of people. Talk a bit about what you were seeing before the pandemic. Were we seeing decreased fare costs? Were we seeing increased passengers at CVG?
Right. All of the numbers were going the directions they should be going, right? The passenger volumes are increasing. But airfares were decreasing because of the increased competition and the increased routes. Well, you know, with the pandemic, all of that came to a screeching halt. But what we're looking forward to going into this summer travel season are, again, increased travel volumes. Right now, we're looking at probably about 80% of our 2019 passenger volumes will be passing through here in June. So that's a nice, healthy number. We actually are looking forward to welcoming two new carriers within the next 2 weeks. So on the Friday the 14th, we're going to be welcoming Sun Country with direct service to Minneapolis. And then on May 20th, we're going to be welcoming in Alaska Airlines that's going to do great daily service to Seattle. And then some of the carriers that were here have been adding in routes. So, you know, if folks want to go to Pensacola, Hilton Head, Charleston, and Portland, Maine, they should check out United. They're doing great service there and direct this summer. And Allegiant added in service to Key West, and Southwest added two new destinations. And then we were very pleased that American announced it will begin service into Boston, and that'll start later this year in the fall. So, I would invite your listeners to go on our website, take a look, because there's new destinations coming back all of the time.
How does someone in your position in the airlines navigate how and when to add new destinations when there was so much uncertainty? I know things are improving, but I imagine these conversations started way earlier than, say, a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, they've been ongoing throughout the pandemic. You know, it's a, you know, very tricky. And I know the airlines continue to struggle with when to bring back service into which markets. Right now, you're seeing a huge concentration of leisure markets, and that's where all the passenger traffic is coming back. Of course, for us, particularly it being the strong business community that we are, we're trying to gauge when will the business travelers return, and not only when, to what volume, and what destinations do they need first. So we partnered with the UC Center for Economics recently and have out on the street now a survey for all business travelers so they can tell us when they think they're going to be returning to the office, more importantly, when they're going to be returning to the skies and where they need to travel to. Because what we'd like to do is gather all that data, go to our airline partners, provide them with some real information to help them do some route planning on when to bring back those business destinations that we need.
You don't have that data yet, though. That's currently being compiled.
The survey just, I think, hit the streets, went out into people's inboxes, I want to say last week. And so we're anxiously waiting to gather that data. I hear we have about 100, 150 responses. And once we get a nice sort of data set, that'll help us inform the conversations we need to have with our carriers.
Well, let's talk about leisure travel. I don't know if you've heard this new buzz term that's going around, revenge travel. Basically, people who are making up for lost time. They had their vacations taken from them last year due to the pandemic. Are you familiar with this term?
You know, I just heard it recently last week. I was just calling it pent-up demand, but if folks want to go with revenge travel, I'm great. So long as they're getting in the air, we can call it whatever they want.
And I guess you're starting to see perhaps some revenge travel bookings. Are you seeing an uptick?
Definitely. As I said, I think, traditionally people would book their, trips several months in advance, et cetera. Now we watch the data. There are so many trips that are being booked only, say maybe 1-2 weeks out. I think people are feeling more confident as more people become vaccinated. I think they've been staying home long enough now that they want to get out and explore and either see their friends and family for those visits they've postponed, or they want to get to the beach, they want to get to the mountains and get back to having some fun.
They also want to be safe. So give us an overview of where the airport is right now on COVID mitigation efforts.
Yeah, thank you. So, for your listeners, they can go into our website. We have a whole section on, we call it Fly Healthy and the Fly Healthy Tips. It'll talk to you about what all the measures we have in place, which are including, increased cleaning procedures. You'll continue to see the plexiglass, have hand sanitizer everywhere. And, I think all of those precautions will continue long into the future. While, we always took great pride here And our housekeeping staff took great pride in the cleanliness. We've increased that, and that will stay into the future. So we ask people, if you're not feeling well, don't fly. Whether it because of the pandemic or because you have a cold, let's just be good neighbors with one another. But go onto our website, Fly Healthy Tips, and take a look at those.
People are still to wear masks in the airport.
Yes. I see that some of the states, inclusive of Kentucky, Indiana, and Ohio, are loosening some of the restrictions, and that'll happen over the course of the next few weeks. There's a federal mandate in place that passengers must wear masks in the terminal and on aircraft. And I think that runs at least through September of this year.
Is that a decision throughout the airport that will be determined by the federal government? Do you have any local control over certain areas of the airport?
No, that we are governed completely. Whatever the FAA will issue on this, that's what we'll have to follow.
We've seen airlines take varying approaches as the pandemic went on about how many people are on a flight, whether the middle seat would be open, for example, how much spacing, and it seems we're starting to see more airlines, maybe most airlines, fill up their planes again. If there is a passenger thinking, I'm fully vaxxed, I know I should probably still wear a mask, but I'm a little hesitant to get on a full plane, what do you tell them?
Well, I think Delta had been the last carrier. Delta, throughout the pandemic, had kept the middle seats open. They just recently relaxed that requirement as of May 1st. So I believe all the carriers now have every seat open for sale. For folks that are hesitant, what I would say is, I've traveled, my family has traveled. I think so long as you make sure you wear your mask, I think the carriers are passing out, some cleaning supplies, wipe down your seat. The airplanes have never been cleaner. Airports have never been cleaner. I realize there might be some hesitation, but I would encourage folks to get back on the bike, get back on the plane, so to speak, and give it a try.
We're talking with Candace McGraw, CEO of Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport, or CVG. We've heard some discussion of, obviously, I think we know now even more than we did earlier in the pandemic that the coronavirus that we're dealing with currently is predominantly an airborne transmitted disease. We've heard people say that airplanes are safe in a lot of respect because of the circulation of the air in them, the way it works. Can you help us understand that?
Sure. And again, I think we have, some diagrams and information on our website to if folks really want to dissect it. But it was an education for me as well. The filtration systems on aircraft are similar to the air filtration systems that are used in operating rooms. And actually, most of them provide even a greater level of cleanliness. So very high tech, the air is cleaned on a continual basis. I think the airlines have put a lot of money and focus on their cleanliness procedures, and I think that will stay in place over the course of time. We've learned a lot about disease spread and disease mitigation, and I believe all the carriers will stay focused on making sure that we can all fly healthy.
What do we know about meal service, for example? Are any of those events on airplanes returning?
I'm not quite sure. I know that some of the carriers are offering the beverage service and the snack service. I'm not quite sure about the full meal service. Again, I would ask, folks should check with their particular carrier, and usually that occurred in front of the cabin. So not quite sure where that stands.
What about food service in the airport? I know that prior to the pandemic, there was a lot of excitement, at least expressed by your organization, about some of the new brands that were opening up shop in the airport. Is that all going well during this?
Well, I'll tell you, it's been a struggle. We've kept up with all of the various health orders that have been in place in terms of, distancing of tables, things being closed. All of that is starting to, reopen and come back, particularly, we're governed in the terminal by the orders of the state of Kentucky relative to food service. those things are coming back. Where we're seeing some difficulty now is bringing back workers. So, you know, like the restaurants on the street are having problems finding enough available staff. I know some of our concession partners are struggling as well. So hopefully that again will begin to open up. And then you'll be seeing, I think, over the course of the next year, some fresh new concepts that we're starting to look at. And some changes on our concession scene.
Do you know whether any of those concession friends of yours that are operating businesses inside the airport are looking to increase incentives or benefits? I know the job marketplace is extraordinarily competitive right now.
Yeah, that I can't speak to. You know, I think the job market is competitive for, you know, not only, you know, your food service, but the shuttle drivers for our parking lots, for, you know, baggage handling, et cetera. So I know we have here at CVG what's called our Strategic Workforce Collaborative. It's a way we bring together the HR staffs from all of our tenants to talk about how we can grow the pool of available workforce, how we can make it easier for folks to find jobs here, become acclimated at the airport, et cetera. And I know this is an issue that they're all talking about and trying to ideate about solutions for it.
Candace, I know that a lot of industries are reflecting on the past year, looking at what worked, what didn't, what changes were forced on them that perhaps they now appreciate. What do you think is a permanent alteration to airports, our airport in particular, because of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, I think a permanent alteration from a physical sense will be the continued focus on cleanliness and continued focus on developing touchless experiences, right? We, over the course of the pandemic, we implemented autonomous floor cleaning robots. We focused on how can we do touchless ordering and concessions, you know, increased cleanliness protocols by our housekeeping staff and what materials they actually use that will provide a longer surface clean, right? So those things will stay in place. I think that our greatest lesson learned during the pandemic here, though, was communication matters, and our people, our staff are a fabulous group of people. You know, we had, while a lot of offices were closed down and people worked from home, you know, of our 460 people that work here for the Airport Authority, two-thirds of those people were here every day. They were on site providing great service, and they didn't miss a beat. And our call-off rates, our sick day usage was down because they showed up to provide service for the passengers.
Candace McGraw is the CEO of the Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport. Candace, I'm certainly ready to get on my summer vacation. I need a direct flight to Traverse City. What are my chances?
Traverse City.
Cherry Capital Airport.
I can offer you some other great locations direct.
I know you can. Don't worry about it.
I can offer you 50 great direct destinations come June.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to talking about that again. And thank you for the time you gave us today, and hope to see you at the airport soon.
Yeah, I hope to see you here too. Thanks.
Up next, an epidemiologist on the precautions you should still be taking if you're hitting the skies or the road for a long-awaited getaway. And a quick reminder, next week, as part of our ongoing series, Trust in Local Government, WVXU's Public Integrity Project, Cincinnati Edition will devote time each afternoon to discuss the growing lack of trust in our elected officials and efforts to reinforce ethical standards in public agencies. You can join the discussion here on Cincinnati Edition, weekdays at noon on 91.7. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. You may have already booked an overdue holiday now that things are improving with the COVID-19 pandemic, but we're not totally in the clear yet. I spoke earlier with Kent State University College of Public Health Professor of Epidemiology, Dr. Tara Smith, about what precautions may still be necessary. Here's our interview. Dr. Tara Smith is a professor of epidemiology at the College of Public Health at Kent State University. Dr. Smith, thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're getting some more optimistic messages from major health organizations like the CDC. We're now allowed to go outside, or at least it seems that it's safer to go outside without masks in many instances. So that light at the proverbial end of the tunnel appears to be shining brighter. I know you're an epidemiologist, not a psychologist, but can you help us put that into perspective of what that means in tackling a pandemic from just a general population perspective? Are we starting to do the right thing?
I hope so. We've seen cases, especially in Ohio, come down over the last few weeks. We're not at the end yet, but I think there definitely is some light at the end of the tunnel as we've seen cases decrease and uptake of vaccinations increase. So I'm feeling a lot more optimistic than I was, say, at this time last year, or certainly in the fall and winter.
So people are starting to venture outside more, but we're talking to you today specifically about how far people are willing to venture out, specifically summertime travel. I know a lot of people's summer plans in 2020 were disrupted or canceled altogether, so people are probably extra antsy to get out and go places. So what is your general advice as people consider what their options might be to get back some of that family vacation time?
Yeah, I still think anything outside is going to be less risk than anything that you're doing inside. So, water parks, if they're not too crowded, amusement parks, same thing. Beach vacations, camping vacations, those types of things are great right now. You know, you can get away, get outside, be with your family, be with loved ones, and have some fun, have some relaxation time. So that's what we're looking to do. But again, it is most safe when you have people that are fully vaccinated and continue to wear masks when necessary. So if you're still going inside some places or doing any kind of indoor dining or other adventures inside, you still need to mask up.
What is your family doing? I think it would be curious to know what an epidemiologist might be doing for vacation. We don't need your itinerary, of course, but just in general, if you can share with us what you might be doing.
Yeah, we are planning a beach vacation. So we are planning to have kind of a standalone location for staying in. So we're not doing like a big hotel right now. And a beach that is less crowded. So hopefully we won't be, shoulder to shoulder with other people and we can spread out. We are planning on doing, restaurant dining, but outside or takeout. I'm not comfortable yet doing stuff inside because we will be going with unvaccinated children that don't have access to the vaccine yet. So all the adults will be vaccinated, but the kids will not. So we're still trying to keep things pretty low risk for us. But we are definitely planning to get out there and see some new places after being mostly in the same county for the last year or so.
You mentioned unvaccinated children. Obviously, you're not the only one dealing with that. It's not yet possible for children under certain ages to be vaccinated, although that may be changing very soon. Mm-hmm. What is the danger for unvaccinated children, even if their parents or adult companions are fully vaccinated?
Yeah. So having fully vaccinated adults definitely helps mitigate the risk because it lessens the chance that a child could become infected with COVID and spread it to adults in the family. So the adults will be pretty protected, but the children still aren't. And children are lucky in that it is rare for kids to get a serious COVID infection or to die from it. We've had about 600 pediatric deaths from COVID over the last year. So it's worse than flu, but, of course, it could be much more serious. But children can still get, relatively serious infection. They can be hospitalized. There is a condition called MISC-C that children can get. And what is kind of a big unknown with kids is long haul syndrome. So those who get sick, maybe even with a mild infection, but can't really knock it. So, you know, weeks or months later, they're still showing symptoms. So those are what I see as the biggest risk for kids. It's not necessarily dying of it, but, you know, getting ill, potentially transmitting it to others in their group, and then having that, you know, potential for continued symptoms even after acute disease seems to end.
We're talking with Dr. Tara Smith, a professor of epidemiology at the College of Public Health at Kent State University. You had mentioned hotels earlier ago as not being part of your own vacation plans. What are the concerns around hotels?
Yeah, hotels I still think are fairly low risk. We just didn't feel like dealing with that. But, you know, as long as you stay out of kind of centralized areas, like, you know, especially if you have a crowded lobby, a small unventilated lobby, elevators, things like that, where, you know, where people congregate, that's the biggest risk in hotels, I think. There have been some studies suggesting that there could be transmission between hotel rooms via, you know, air exchange or even, you know, potentially gas from toilets or something like that. But again, there's just a very few case studies. I think that's, again, pretty unlikely as far as transmission between hotel rooms. But those central areas are probably where most of the risk is in a hotel.
Are you planning to drive as part of your vacation rather than fly?
We are. And again, you know, there are risks to either. Of course, driving, you have the chance for an accident, whereas flying, that's much more unlikely. We had considered flying, but for us, just because the number of people going and our routes, which had no direct flights, we would have had to have, you know, taken a couple flights and then drive anyway. Driving was simpler for us. But if you are flying, again, the biggest risk really seems to be within the airports. So, you know, try to, again, mask up continuously, unless you are actively eating or drinking. Try to stay away from others as much as possible, which I know can be difficult in a crowded airport or, of course, on the airplane. You know, just keep masked up and try to find good masks. So there are some government certified, what are called KN95 masks. So they're a little bit more protective to the wearer, and have generally a better seal and better fit. So they're a little bit more protective than just the cloth masks that we've been using. So maybe look into those as well if you're planning on flying.
What do we know about what you just said, that perhaps the airport itself might be more dangerous as it relates to COVID than an airplane?
Yeah, well, there are more people around you in the airport than in the airplane. So, and airplanes, of course, have pretty good ventilation and air circulation. So even if somebody is positive on the airplane, you know, hopefully some of that virus should be filtered out and you know, rather than lingering in the plane to infect you. But, you know, I think people also tend to be a little less cautious within the airport because there's not you know, people policing you every moment. So maybe they may be more likely to take off masks and things like that while they're waiting rather than on the airplane. So I don't think we have any great studies to definitively say that, you know, the airport itself is more risky than the airplane. But just given, you know, the factors on one versus the other, it seems like that's where people are letting their guard down a bit more.
What about what airlines are doing, the way that they're responding to the CDC advisory that perhaps the middle seat on flights should be blocked off as to reduce coronavirus exposure? It appears that nearly all of the American airlines have decided to stop doing that and planes are full again. Is that a concern?
It is. And again, I haven't been on a plane, so I can't share my experience over the last year. But from what I understand, yeah, most of them have stopped blocking off that middle seat, which is unfortunate because there was a recent publication that suggested that was actually helpful in mitigating transmission within the airplanes themselves. So I think that is a misstep. I understand that, you know, they've lost funds over the last year and want to get people, you know, back on their planes. But I think that is a mistake, in my opinion.
I want to talk about amusement parks, if we can. I know a lot are reopening to higher capacity, maybe even full capacity. Since they're outside, and we've learned a lot more since last year about outside and COVID-19, what are your thoughts about going to amusement parks during a pandemic like this one?
Yeah, I think those are also relatively safe. Again, you can't say anything is completely safe. But for me, the biggest issue I would see with amusement parks is when you are standing still and in pretty close proximity to people. So like when you're waiting in line for a ride or something like that. So so you aren't moving, so you don't have kind of that, you know, airflow around you. And, you know, you're pretty close to other individuals, either in, you know, in the lines or in the little gates as you wait for a ride. So those are the times that would concern me, even when I was outside. And then, of course, again, anytime you're inside of a location, you should continue to be masked as much as possible.
We're talking with Dr. Tara Smith, a professor of epidemiology at the College of Public Health at Kent State University. We're also seeing other arts organizations, for example, transition to more outdoor programming, since indoor is still deemed mostly or somewhat unsafe, depending on the venue and the airflow through them. So you'll see orchestras outside this summer. You'll see theatrical productions taking place outside this summer, and a lot of concerts will just be moving outside. Any concerns there?
Yeah, so again, just the notion that you may be stationary in close proximity to other individuals who will probably be unmasked. So, you know, if you can spread out from other groups and kind of stay distanced from people that you don't know, and especially those who may be unmasked, that's much safer than, again, being kind of shoulder to shoulder with other individuals who you don't know their status, or, you know, their vaccine status, you don't know their infection status, and they may be outside probably not wearing a mask.
A lot of municipalities and private clubs closed their swimming pools last year. This year, a lot of them, if not most of them, are planning to reopen. And so swimming pools are particularly curious, right? Because, I mean, you can be completely submerged in the pool. Your fluids are going into the pool. You might be swimming near people. Your mouths are open. You're obviously not wearing a mask while in the pool. What are your thoughts about swimming pools?
Yeah, those still make me a little bit nervous. And again, it would depend on kind of proximity and crowding of the pool. So if it's, you know, only a relatively few people and you can keep a safe distance from them, and, you know, again, it's a nice breezy day or something, that probably wouldn't bother me. But we will have a pool where we are going. And, you know, if it's packed with people, we probably will not be using that one.
We are seeing international travel sort of open up a little bit again. Are there any particular concerns about going overseas?
Yeah, just again, you know, the length of the plane ride and the length of time that you might be exposed to other individuals, especially if they are, you know, not keeping mask use on the plane. So, I mean, it would be the duration of time that you're on a plane with other individuals who may be unmasked if they're not keeping that very strict. And destinations matter too. Some places are already requiring that individuals be vaccinated in order to fly to those locations. So that would be, again, increase your safety a bit because everyone should be vaccinated. They're also doing a lot of testing for flights. So that could also reduce the risk a little bit. Although, again, you know, testing is not perfect. We've seen that some people who are infected can slip through. So, you know, again, I would just keep in mind that, you know, that although risk is low, it's not zero.
Tara Smith is a professor of epidemiology at the College of Public Health at Kent State University. Dr. Smith, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and observations with us today. We do appreciate the time you gave us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monk. Summer events are returning to downtown Cincinnati. I spoke earlier with a representative from 3CDC about what to expect. Christy Samad is Senior Vice President of Event Management at Cincinnati Center City Development Corporation, better known around here as 3CDC. Christy, thank you for taking some time with us today.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
All through this pandemic, when we were forced to mostly stay inside, but if we could do anything, it had to be outdoors. And we did see people turn to Fountain Square for some of those opportunities. Tell me what you think this community learned about that space over the past year plus.
Sure. And, you know, to be honest with you, with all of the businesses downtown working remote, 3CBC being very fortunate that we manage outdoor civic spaces because we are able to still see life and people come through. And so while we did have people at Fountain Square, it really, Washington Park was the, I think, the savior for a lot of people being an 8-acre landscape in this, you know, dense urban neighborhood. It was a lot of, I think a lot of people looked at that as their oasis away from, you know, COVID to kind of get out, to separate, but be still outside and see some life. But so the great news is that, you know, I feel like with one of the only spaces to retreat to, we've only seen more and more people coming back, of course, in a safe manner, but really utilizing these spaces.
Was it a challenge programming those spaces?
It was. And actually, once, you know, when everything shut down in March, we obviously, you know, all programming was on a hold. The people still, you know, the weather was breaking, people were coming. And so by the time things started getting a little less restricted and people could, you know, things could start happening, restaurants started opening, bars, et cetera, we were really conservative on how to start layering programming on top because there were so many people coming as is, but then we wanted to make sure that we were still creating a really safe, fun, some, you know, surprise and delight atmosphere that you could come to the park. So there were definitely challenges, but our team was incredible and flexible and innovative on trying to figure out how to do things, whether it was putting, you know, chalk circles. Our whole event team would go out every week and put chalk circles in the civic lawn so people could, you know, separate 6 feet away in their pods. We changed our whole format for the bar at Washington Park. The same thing at Fountain Square. You know, we made sure that everything was socially distanced and just did table service and things of that nature. So I think that with everyone's brains together, it was really fun to see how we could come up with different ways to do things.
I know you're planning a series of events over the coming months as people do start to return. What are your concerns about whether people are eager enough to get back out, if people still have some questions about safety? Do you think that this is going to be, I don't know, a rocking summer?
I do. I think that, and I think that's more of the concern, is that people are just itching to get out. And so we want to make sure that we're doing it responsibly and we have everything in place. You know, now that, again, with the weather breaking, more vaccines getting out there, I think that there's people are feeling more comfortable. And before, it was with the hesitancy and people in the space, it was a little easier to guide people. But now it's like, okay, what can we put in place to make sure that everyone feels safe, even for those who want to still utilize but may not have gotten vaccinated, et cetera. So I think that we're just going to, the great news is that because we were able to implement some of our programs last summer and figure out new protocols, you know, we learned a lot. I think we learned the patron experience in some instances were better. And so we're going to continue to do that this year. And I think it'll only enhance the spaces. For example, with Ziegler Park Pool, you know, it's a public pool. But we implemented a reservation system last year. And while we don't necessarily feel like we need to do that this year, we feel like it just gave a better experience to the patron. We could keep capacity at a good level. We could continue to make sure everyone had enough space. And so we're going to continue to do that. And I think we'll do the same for the Fountain Square, the ice rink this year as well.
I want to ask you more about that, because regardless of what industry in which we find ourselves, it does seem, as terrible as this pandemic was, perhaps we all learned some efficiencies, some new approaches to things that we can look back on now and say, I think we're going to keep this process. Are there other examples of that in the way 3CDC will go about programming events around here?
Definitely. I mean, I think, for example, we obviously last year did not have our egg hunt at Washington Park, which actually originated at Fountain Square. But I don't know, for those who had seen it in prior years, it was really like the Hunger Games of egg hunts, right? We just threw a bunch of eggs in the civic lawn, and at, you know, when time was called, families just ran and grabbed as many eggs as they could. And while it was fun to watch, it was probably kind of a chaotic experience. And so this year it was more of a scavenger hunt, and it probably, you know, gave the families more of an experience to hang out at Washington Park at their leisure. And so things like that, we would have probably never changed that, but because we had to this year for, to make sure that we weren't encouraging crowds at one time, we're definitely probably going to look for that in future. And so I think that there's a lot of those things, even looking at the restaurants and the bars downtown and the delivery service and the meal kits. I think that this is the silver lining, right, of this year. And not to mention the streeteries with having to push out dining in the sidewalks and the streets. You know, now that we're working with the city to make that a permanent thing, I mean, you go downtown now and it's just, there is so much vibrancy on the street, and that wouldn't have happened without the pandemic.
That's something else I wanted to ask you about. I think that's correct. You know, I ventured out a little bit and saw some of the experiences that people are having, but a lot of people did not. They were extra cautious throughout, and they might be returning downtown for the first time. And what do you think those folks will be seeing different than had they gone out, I don't know, 15 months ago?
Sure. Well, and I think that's, to your point, exactly, especially with all of the central business district, with a lot of the businesses still being remote and just not having that activity. I think a lot of people, because the world was at a standstill, right? But the development and the progress has continued through this entire period. So when people come downtown, you know, one, they're going to see these streeteries, which really, it just is amazing how it adds the vibrancy to the sidewalks. It feels very European. It's just so much more inviting. But other things, you know, at Fountain Square, while we didn't have a ton of programs going on last year, Fifth Third redid their whole entire campus and the facade. They gifted the city a $2 million stage that we launched that we're excited to use this year. It's beautiful. It's permanent. We have a brand new LED board at Fountain Square. Court Street, right in front of the new Kroger, is actually reopening to more pedestrian friendly on June 10th. And it's this amazing streetscape, not to mention the SD Stadium is opening now officially. So all of these things that I think, you know, people just didn't realize the momentum. There are still things going on downtown on the development side. So when they, you know, feel comfortable to come down, it's going to be a rediscovery. What's out here, you know, it's going to be a fun new downtown. And I think there will be a lot of new things to see.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're joined by Christy Samad, Senior Vice President of Event Management at the Cincinnati Center City Development Corporation, or 3CDC. So let's look ahead to what's planned. So you've got these various parts of downtown that you're charged with programming. Let's talk about them a little bit individually. What do you expect to happen at Fountain Square this summer?
Sure. So Fountain Square, we started, the rink went down at the end of February, which again, it was a lot better than we thought it was going to be. I think it was one of those only outdoor activities, so people kind of got used to it. And so we started programming in April of just all of those local musicians that have been out of work. We wanted to try to get them back on stage. And so we have some pop-up performances. On the smaller side, because we do want to scale, we want to continue to look at the CDC and the state guidelines, and continuing to kind of, progress with them. And so we're looking at, you know, these local smaller acts, but then throughout the summer, you're going to see some more regional and potentially national acts come as guidelines, lighten up a little bit. And so in May, you know, we have, reggae back on Wednesdays. We're bringing salsa, which looks a little different. We're, not going to have the dancing instruction or the dance floor at first, but we will, you know, as best as we can, implement that as fast as we can once we're permitted to. And then on Friday and Saturday nights, we'll have concerts. Like I said, they'll grow. We have trivia on Monday and Tuesday, and not to mention Monday through Friday. As businesses start seeing more employees come down, you know, we have lunch. So we're providing socially distanced tables, food trucks are going to be back on the square. We'll have a bar open just to, you know, ease your, have you enjoy your summer a little bit more.
Well, what are we hearing about bumper cars on Fountain Square?
Sure. So we launched bumper cars for the ice rink this year. And they were incredibly popular. So there's bumper cars on ice. And then we do actually have the wheels, but you can flip them out and put them on granite. And so we don't have a date set or it's the same cars. Yeah. And we don't have a date set, but we're looking at how we can bring them out in the summer at some point.
Oh, wow. I bet that's going to be popular. People will be able to get outside and take out a little bit of aggression on their friends. So that's always appealing, exactly. I think, to a lot of people. Well, take us to Washington Park. What's planned there?
Sure. Oh, well, there. So like I said, you know, we've been pretty active for this entire year, but the porch presented by PPG Bates is open 7 days a week. So again, I think a lot of people look at the space as their backyard, especially the people who live downtown that don't necessarily have outdoor space. So that's open 7 days a week. And then we supplement with some other activities. Just launched jazz on Mondays, which actually was at Memorial Hall. And you mentioned earlier, how do you know people are ready? And we launched the jazz series at Memorial Hall, an indoor facility with all of the correct guidelines following those. And we started with 80 people in the theater, which was the capacity we were permitted. And as that was lifted a little more, we ended up with selling out shows at 130 people. So we've seen the demand. People are ready. It was on a Monday night. Just really people are thirsty, I think, for that local music scene and just kind of getting out and socializing. But so that's going to be at the park on Mondays. And then we have workout classes Tuesday, Wednesday. Like I said, we have the chalk circles, so you can get your own circle so you feel like you have the distance around you need. And then on Thursdays and Sundays, you'll see some pop-up performances. And then we just announced that we're excited to partner with SBC on the pre-matches for their home games. So the first one will be May 16th. And for their 17 home games, Washington Park will be your destination to come prior to get excited and head over to the game.
Please continue.
So, and after Memorial Day, we'll add some more, like our movie nights are coming back on Wednesday. We'll have a Roots revival on Thursdays, and then Friday Flow, which we've gotten a ton of questions about because that's probably one of the most popular events that we have. We weren't able to bring that back last year with the attendance, but we are looking at bringing it back and scaling it, just like I mentioned, the other concerts with starting smaller, but then getting to national, and those are on Fridays. In the summer.
I imagine that Memorial Hall may be somewhat still difficult to program. Where do you think we are on indoor venues making a comeback?
Yeah, it's definitely been a challenge. And, you know, we have been working with our friends at other venues just to make sure we're all kind of on the same vein of things. We are hopeful that by July, we will see some of our shows coming back. We're trying to do what we can with the capacity we're given, which is currently at that 25%. And so while, you know, it's just not profitable for most venues to do that, we're hoping that the capacity will increase by July. And then you'll see a lot of those events that were postponed last year coming back.
Christy Samad is Senior Vice President of Event Management at Cincinnati Center City Development Corporation, or 3CDC. Christy, thanks for the time you gave us. I'm sure we'll see you out and about downtown this summer.
Thanks. We'll see you then.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at wvxu.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.